This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor, and this episode is with Steve Polidori and Melody Polidori Harris. They are brother and sister and the fourth generation family owners of Polidori Sausage. The company was founded in 1925, so that makes it, well, let's do the math, 100 years old. I'm going to say, I know you're celebrating 100. I am not a huge fan of celebrating business birthdays because I think customers don't really care about that. But maybe I had to stop myself because maybe in this case I'm wrong, because it seems that today more and more customers buy the company as much as they buy the product. So we're going to talk a lot about sort of heritage and history and stuff today, but also we're going to talk about, I know, silly, how the sausage is made. I said that and I thought to myself, what a dumb thing to say. People must tease you about that all the time, but we are going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about the balance between tradition and innovation, both in product and in distribution. I want to give a quick shout out before we begin to my friend Jen Lester and her team at Philosophy Communications. They put us together today. So Melody and Steve, welcome to ProCo 360.
Pleasure to be here, Dave.
Thank you, Dave, for having us.
You're welcome. And, you know, sorry, listeners, but they showed up with a box of sausage, and you
can
just
not
imagine. Yeah, sorry, you're not getting that, but I am. All right, so talk about your history, the history of Polidori.
Well, Polidori was started by our great-grandmother, Anna Polidori, and her husband, Rocco Polidori, out of a small little grocery store in North Denver, 34th and Shoshone.
So they were, and that's, I mean, I know of sausage companies that do start sometimes like in the back of a grocery store. Is that, what was the motivation there?
Well, Anna had a family heirloom sausage recipe that she brought over from Italy. And at the grocery store, she was the butcher. So in her spare time, when she wasn't cutting up steaks and or pork chops and wrapping them in the butcher paper, she would make up her family heirloom sausage and she would sample it at the store and sell it out of the case.
Wow. So people would like, oh, you made this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it smells so good.
Yeah. So so there must be, is it almost like folklore, you know, this story to you and your family?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, every corner had a grocery store at the most part, but what made ours unique was that we had a USDA-inspected butcher in the back. So we actually sold to other grocery stores and restaurants around the neighborhoods.
Yeah. So you sold to the other mm-hmm. meat sellers?
And so, the other grocery stores.
Yeah. So did they have the Polidori name on it then?
No. I mean, they sold the meat, that, you know, yeah, a yeah. sticker or something on it that said,
but
Polidori.
There wasn't like that high-level marketing where yeah. you've got your logo and your, you know, all the branding that goes along with it in today's day and time.
Yeah. I think I can picture sort of the back of the store, you know, kind of going on. Now,
the old wooden butcher blocks. And,
oh, yeah. yeah.
They didn't wear any hairnets.
I'm sure no hairnets, no plastic gloves, none of that.
Smock.
So back then, what were the casings made of?
Yeah, they're hog casings as we use today.
You still use those? All
yes,
right.
correct.
So none of the whatever vegetable gel
or
stuff?
Collagen. That, no, we don't. None of that. We use those today, but they didn't use anything like that back then.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So
and real simple machinery, too. It's basically just a grinder that turned into a mixer at the same time. Basically.
And so then it would, but there was like an extractor, right? Like
yeah, the grinder would turn into the extrusion too. So they'd put it back into the grinder, put a horn on the apparatus and stuff it too.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing you make more of it now than they did then.
We make more and we have a lot more automation.
Yeah. So how much do you make now? So, you know, think about
on
that.
On a typical week, probably making on average about 80,000 pounds from our facility.
80,000 pounds.
Yeah.
Wow. That is a lot. All right, we're going to get to more of that in a minute. But I wanted to start really with the idea that you're the fourth generation brothers. Like, did you want to get into the business or did they guilt you into the business? Did you have no choice? Did one of you want to be an astronaut?
Well, both of our parents were attorneys and they told us, kind of swayed us away from that.
You know, away from what? Being a lawyer?
Being an attorney. So I needed a job when I was in college and my grandfather needed some help in his little business and that's how I got started in it.
Huh.
When I was in college.
Yeah.
When I graduated college, he offered me a position to, you know, make, you know, have possibly the business getting, you know, handed to me one day.
Yeah. But when you went to, what was your degree going to be in college?
Business. I went to, I graduated.
Yeah. And so, well, I'm not doubting that. I'm just saying, like, you know, not a lot of guys go to college to make sausage.
No, but it's a business. Yeah. You know, and the food business is a great business to be into, and it's somewhat recession-proof, and everybody's got to eat.
Do you think, and I'll turn to you, Melody, about this, both of you, but, you know, you go to college, and I think about my college experience, and then I did grad school, and I don't know that I've applied any of it, except for typing from high school.
Right.
So, like, did you really learn anything in college that you felt like you applied to make you successful?
I learned how to make connections and meet people, and that's really what this business is about.
Okay. No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
It is not. You sell sausage. How can it be about meeting people?
Well, but, you know.
it's deeply about relationships.
Really? So talk about that.
Oh, I mean, so many of the customers that we have been lifelong customers, and they buy from the family because they know they're getting a quality product. But, you know, Steve and I have so many cell phone numbers of our customers that feel like they can just pick up the phone and call us. I mean, that is deeply relationship driven because of the service that we have provided over the years.
You're not talking about consumers. You're talking about like B2B.
No, I am talking more B2B, like on the restaurant side. But to throw that back over onto the consumer side, info@polidorisausage.com comes directly to me. I am the first line of connection to a customer, and I find nothing more gratifying than responding to our customers. I would say 95% of those are, this is the best sausage I've ever had. I just had it in this, or I was at this restaurant. How do I get this? You know, it could be an e-commerce or whatever, and we point them in the right direction. Occasionally, you might get a complaint, and we respond to those too.
But and people are writing to info at?
I bet you a dozen a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must be fun, though.
It is really fun. And it is fun.
It's gratifying.
When a Polidori is actually responding to that because they see it in the signature block, they're like, what? Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right. So did you want to get in the business too, Melanie?
She didn't want to work for my grandfather.
I didn't want to work for my grandfather. And my coming to Polidori was sheerly by accident. I can thank my first daycare lady who had my children.
What's the story for that?
Yeah. My husband and I were about ready to go on our 10-year anniversary, leaving on a Monday. And on Friday, my daycare lady gave us a 2-week notice and said, I'm quitting. I'm going to get an office job. And I was like, oh, nobody else can watch Will and Grace. So I was –
Is that really their name?
Mm-hmm, Will and Grace. Okay. William and Grace are my kids' names.
All right.
And I looked at my husband and I was like, I think it might be time for a job change. Like, I was traveling a lot. I didn't have a whole lot of flexibility. My husband, bless his soul, was like single parent because I was traveling quite a bit. And my brother had bought my grandfather out the year before. And I was like, well, maybe that was some low-hanging fruit and I could take that, go help my brother out.
And I needed help at the time.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I really did.
So when she approached you?
Oh, I welcomed it with all. I actually asked her if she wanted to come to work with me. Grandpa's not here anymore.
I had zero idea what I was getting myself into.
Wow. So do you guys divide and conquer, or do you just handle everything mutually?
Well, it's some division for sure. We're involved in most decision-making processes at work, both of us together, but she usually handles marketing and finance side, and I'm more production involved.
Got it. All right. So talk about your product lineup, too, so listeners can get a better understanding of Polidori. I mean, 80,000 pounds a week. So,
well,
yeah.
We started with Italian sausage with my grandfather and evolved it to pretty much every flavor profile of sausage that's out there. And if we don't make it, we don't say no. We can make it.
So. Who do certain customers ask you to make certain kinds of new products?
We do a lot of proprietary recipes for customers.
Really? Like what? What's an example?
My neighbor Felix.
Come on.
And the View House Group. We do a proprietary recipe for them. We also do a proprietary recipe for Pizza Republica. I'm trying to think of who else. We do a proprietary chicken sausage recipe for Snooze Nationwide.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Those are notable customers.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, on the Snooze menu, for example, do they say Polidori?
They do.
Yeah. How do you negotiate that?
Some of them want to.
They want to because it, especially here in Colorado, it shows a lot of pride in supporting a local company and the credibility that goes along with utilizing a 100-year brand. And
well, I got a question for you about how you make it. First of all, no preservatives, no soy, no nitrates, no sugar, no MSG, no artificial colors or flavorings. So how do you make it taste good?
Pork, salt, and spices.
Come on.
Just like grandma used to make it.
Yeah, but the spices, that's the secret, right?
You know, and we use fresh spices that we source locally too, by Rocky Mountain Spice. They do most of our blends for us so that we don't screw it up in-house anymore.
So they deliver the they deliver a I mean, you know how much of a
proprietary blend for us, and they're pre-blended so that we can basically put it in there and it's consistent day in and day out.
Wow. So when you say it's a proprietary blend, that means
it's our
blend.
They're
not going to disclose that.
No. They're not.
How do you know?
We trust David Tenenbaum.
Oh, that's nice. You know, but it does seem like that's an example. I mean, NDA, yes, you can have him sign it. But ultimately, you say you trust David. Mm-hmm. And at 80,000 pounds a week, are you still, it seems like you're still a family business.
We very much are. Yeah. And I think we treat a lot of our employees, most of our employees, almost all of our employees, like family. Mm. A lot of things that we do around the plant to make people, you know, with very little turnover.
Really?
Yeah. You give people autonomy. You expect them to do their job and they do their job. There's very little drama. So.
And there's, you know, I'm sure all your workers get samples or.
They do.
Benefits. Product benefits, yes. I'm sure they're very popular around
That's
the 4th
a perk.
Of July.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's talk some more about tradition versus innovation. Because, you know, I mean, you mentioned that there are some new products that you try at customer requests and stuff, but ultimately you're really leaning on your tradition. Right. So how do you balance this notion? I mean, you look at other products and they've got things. I made some notes. I did a quick search, like pineapple and mango, even blackberries. It's funny.
Plant-based.
Melody just sort of grimaced when I was saying these things. Like, how do you decide, though, when to innovate and when to stay traditional and the ingredients and stuff like that?
Well, like we follow that strict rule, just pork, salt, and spices. And we work within that parameter and that's kind of what we're guiding.
Really? So you're not adding?
Don't need to add any of that. We don't think, you know, most of those things are shelf stabilizers or enhancers. So they, you know, they're on the shelf for 3-6 months and the product shouldn't be on the shelf that long.
But I mean, and a lot of our competitors will use ingredients in their products commonly. You can see it right on the label. BHA and BHT. Google that. Or ChatGPT that. Those are common preservatives found in pet food. I mean, it's a pretty easy sell when you're out and you see that kind of thing. But it's like, yeah, we don't need fillers. We don't need any of those kinds of things.
Okay, but you know, you must get crazy when you see all these other new labels out on there on the shelves. They've got cute labels. They've got cute ingredients. You know, I mean, do you ever just like,
well, they're trendy. I mean, those things don't sell. I mean, you see them on the shelf, you know, limited time or limited offer.
Yeah.
And no, I don't think we get super threatened by that because if we stay true to who we are, then there's not a lot to be scared of. There's enough business to go around for a lot of different companies. We think we fill a niche and we, you know, sure, we can continue growing and take on more business, but you're always going to have some threat of competition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, does it ever get boring to not be one of those companies where you're adding all these, I was about to say weird, but I don't know what the term would be, all these different ingredients. You know, I mean, that seems like it would be fun. Beer makers are, you know, creating different flavors every day, and they must think it's fun. Do you ever want to make new?
We do. We create quite a few new items. I mean, in the last 5-6 years, we've created, you know, Hatch Green Chili and Cheese. It's not unsimilar to what's out there, but it's different than what is out there.
But it's still focused on the sausage, on
clean ingredients
and spices, and yeah. Is that how you define your niche, Melody? Is pretty simple. It's pork and spice.
Salt and spices. And, clean.
Yeah.
And as we expand in other states, like we have been, it's amazing how people just want clean ingredients.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and by the way, listeners, I did get an early sample, and I was telling them earlier that I used their hot Italian sausage to make pasta sauce. It was really good. So, yeah, there's the endorsement too. So, you know, how do you, I'm interested in telling you also about how you position yourself relative to the competition, because I'm looking at your logo. You've got it on your jackets. It's is that the Colosseum, the Roman Colosseum
yes.
in your logo? So everything about Melody stroking her badge there. everything about your logo talks about tradition, and your brand is about tradition. And how effective is that with, you know, the young and affluent?
I mean,
I think it's branding.
Branding is very important to us. Everything that we put out, we've got a branding deck. The marketing department has a branding deck, and it's got to be these colors. And everything that leaves Polidori, whether it's on a piece of point of sale or a business card or a label at the grocery store or a tag in the full service meat case or, you know, banners that go up or any of the branding that we do at any of the stadiums and arenas. I mean, it is a thoughtful process from the coloring to the, you know, where the logo gets positioned. I mean, everything is very important to us because, you know, branding is everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you more about that in a moment. I'm going to take a quick break and thank listeners. You're listening to ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 4 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is a podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guests today are Steve Polidori and Melody Polidori-Harris of Polidori Sausage Company. I want to thank our sponsors, Kinsley Meetings. And Kinsley Meetings is ProCo 360's longest-running sponsor. They're growing based on a great reputation for producing meetings and conventions that serve their customers' goals and objectives. Also, Via Technologies, really want to thank them for hosting ProCo 360 and all the great help their team gives me around managing the website. Colorado Biz Magazine is a company where our partnership is one of building our audiences together. And Denver Angels, we're partnering to feature great Colorado companies. Go to ProCo360.com and check out all these partners. Hey, and there's a bonus sponsor because it's that time of year when we think about taxes. This episode is sponsored by the Colorado Department of Revenue's new sales and use tax system. That's SUTS. It's your free one-stop shop for Colorado's tax jurisdictions. Quickly file and pay statewide with simple online forms at the SUTS portable. At the SUTS portal. That's where you go. go to tax.colorado.gov. All right. So I want to get back to this branding and the idea that I'm still questioning, you know, how a traditional Colosseum Italian flag-esque logo appeals to people who are affluent in their 20s, 30s. You know, is there a disconnect between the idea of new and the idea of traditional?
I think the Colosseum is well known by everybody, especially because of TikTok. So, I think our logo, I don't know, I think it's timeless, honestly.
Yeah.
I would agree with
you're
that.
You're both nodding. Because, you know, it almost would seem like if you were selling technology, maybe using the Roman Colosseum might not be the right thing. But you're selling sausage, mm-hmm. something that seems like it's so grounded.
Old world, you know.
Yeah. So, all right. But I was curious about what your take is on that. And your feeling is that are young people buying it as much as people that are?
Yeah, we have done – we get some analytics, obviously, from, Instagram and – Facebook and we're a little bit on TikTok, not a ton of that. LinkedIn, but we do see, we are watching and traffic to our website. We are looking at those demographics. And I think traditionally it was a little bit older, you know, maybe 40 and older, but it's crazy the demographic and the hits that we're getting, you know, call it 18 to 40.
Really?
Now. So they're really increasing.
That's cool. What do you think that is?
Back to the clean ingredients.
Wow.
Well, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That and marketing.
And people want to resonate with a, especially here in Colorado on the retail side, they resonate with someone that's a local company. And I mean, I'm not going to lie. There were some calculated risks in having some of our sports partnerships that we have. And people will often say, you know, how do you measure the ROI on that? We are the official sausage and bratwurst of the Colorado Rockies, of the DU Pioneers, of Ball Arena and the Colorado Avalanche. We don't have IP rights with the Denver Nuggets. But all of those things where we're getting product into the hands of consumers, mm-hmm. they go back to the grocery store. I mean, our retail sales have really crushed it over the past 24 months. And I think we can directly attribute it back to some of the branding that we've done.
You know, that's a good question, really, Melody, because when you say you think you can directly attribute it, my thought is, well, why do you think that?
Because sales are up.
Because we've seen an increase in retail sales.
Right, but it corresponds to those sponsorships.
I think it does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And brand recognition.
Yeah. And brand recognition.
So talk more about your distribution. I mean, some is through grocery stores. I mean, how much of your volume, because you not only are you the official sponsor at the Rockies, for example, in Ball Arena, but you sell your product in those places, mm-hmm. right? So how much of your sales really is driven through those B2B channels or those venue kinds of things versus grocery, direct to consumer, and things
like
that?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways to answer that. We unequivocally won't do a partnership with any team unless our product is served in the concession stands.
That makes sense.
I mean, that is just, it's just
that
natural.
Would be weird, wouldn't it?
It would be
some
strange.
Other product. Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think we've got a tangible product where you can do that. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting, and I think what a lot of people don't realize, is only about 20% of our business is to retail, where you would buy the product at like King Soopers, City Market, Safeway, and a handful of other like mom and pop kind of grocery stores that we like to call them. So the other 80% is to food service. We are doing, and when I say food service, that spans a lot of different, what I'm going to kind of define as octopus arms. It is healthcare. It is stadiums and universities. It is arenas and stadiums. It is restaurants. It is camps. It is hotels.
Wow. And that's 80%?
80%. Yeah. And we're distributing to 24 different states. Out, you know, 23 here in Colorado, and then another 23 states outside of the U.S. or outside of the state of Colorado, excuse me.
So that's interesting. So you must sell through distributors in those areas.
We
right?
do.
Yeah.
We do. And largely here in Colorado, too.
Mm-hmm.
The Sysco's, the Benny Keith's, the Shamrock's, the U.S. Foods.
Really?
PFGs. Oh, yeah.
So why do they – I mean, yours is a premium product. And when I think of those kinds of companies, I think that they want to sell something.
Well, you got chefs awesome. That want premium products too.
Yes.
So that's where we come in.
Yeah. But schools don't care.
Yes, they do.
Come on.
They want clean ingredients.
No.
Clean ingredients.
Boulder Valley, St. Vrain, Cherry Creek Schools, Douglas County Schools. Those are all customers. There's a handful more that are not coming to my mind. We do business with all of those. And yes, they do. They care about the ingredients. And they have really, over the course of, you know, maybe the last 10 or so years, elevated what they're serving to their clientele, to their students and that type of thing. So
that is interesting and surprising, and they're willing to pay a premium to...
We're competitive.
All right.
Yeah. In price.
Yeah. So they don't have to buy crap. They can buy good food at a similar price, competitive price.
Yep.
Wow. All right. Okay. I cannot move into the last section of this conversation without turning back and saying, okay, how is the sausage made? Seriously. Like, if you're making 80,000 pounds of sausage, what are you doing?
It's pretty simple.
All right.
We can get the pork in. It's all boneless, so we don't have to bone or anything.
So what comes into you? What
we get pork picnic trims, which are about 82-18 fat to lean ratio. And then we get pork trim in, which runs 72 to 28. Fat to lean ratio. And then we blend those together, get about a 78 to 22 fat to lean ratio, which is really good for sausage. Not a lot of fat, which you find in like your Jimmy Dean, which runs about 60-40.
60 lean, 40 fat.
All right.
And you're 18 fat.
Yes, correct.
Got it. All right. Makes a big yes.
So and then we take in. What we does it take come that in? We come they come
comes
in big
like a
combos.
Swimming pool, like a little kitty swimming pool.
No,
you know, they're cardboard tall, combos. Like, they call them combos, and 2,000 pounds coming on a pallet.
Wow. Okay, so
we
that
get fresh
into
pork
a huge...
in twice a week. We get the pork. We put it into a mixer. A grinder. We grind it up, and it goes from the grinder to the mixer. Add spices from the mixer to one of the extruders,
and then it gets. Pop, pop, pop into the
whatever
cases.
Shape and size you want.
Wow, it really isn't that complicated.
No, it's not. But consistency and quality day in and day out is a is
so
a big
then
issue.
We you know we have a staff depending upon what item is being made because we could be making patties, we could be making links, we could be making bulk, and then you know it comes off the line. We've got skilled workers that are pumping those boxes full. Then it goes onto a taper. Then it goes through metal detection. Then it gets palletized into the freezer and basically assembled to get out the door.
Wow. All right. Well, it just isn't that complicated,
is it? It's not that easy. But it's well, the pork, the sausage part's pretty easy.
So the rest of the business is way more. So the making the sausage part, that's the hard
that's
part.
The easy, part. The easy
that's
part.
That's probably the easiest
wow.
part.
Wow. That's funny. Okay. So what is the hard part? When you if you had to each pick a part that you think is the hardest part of the business, what is it?
No, there's so many.
It's all the regulations, the insurance, the labor costs. It's all the tedious little things like that. But you got to have a strong acumen to be able to deal with that stuff because as easy as the sausage is to make, you have to be able to deal with that other side of the business.
So what have you changed from when was it your grandmother and grandfather or great-grandmother, great-grand?
Well, my great-grandmother and grandfather started it out of the grocery store. And then my grandfather and his brother ran the grocery store from 1948 until 1982 when they sold it, when my great-grandmother passed away.
So
my grandfather started this little business. Right. And he started out with basically a small little extruder, a little hydraulic press that held 50 pounds. Hmm. Yeah.
That's not much.
No.
So what have you changed since taking over as the fourth generation?
Oh, automation, complete automation.
Big investments?
Big investments. Machines are outrageously expensive, but they pay for themselves.
Yeah.
And they allow us to make all the little different shapes and sizes. And,
wow. Yeah. So if your grandparents looked at you now and saw what you were doing,
Yeah, I don't think they'd be, who's this? What's this? I don't think they'd be able to fathom it.
Yeah.
It's humbling to think about what they would think.
I mean, starting out of a grocery store, maybe doing, you know, a couple hundred pounds a week versus what we're doing now. You know, it's just, and when I started with my grandfather, we were lucky to do maybe 5,000 pounds a week. So.
Wow. All right. So how big are you going to get?
I don't know.
We like slow, sustained growth. We say no to some opportunities that come our way, but it's important that we are maintaining the business that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, can you keep up with the demand?
Yeah. Right now, yes.
But would you have to expand if you wanted to grow?
To find expansion.
Well, I mean, would you have to buy new equipment, buy bigger
facility?
Well,
we do that every year. We go see what's new and neat and what's going to help us. You know.
We can run second shifts. There's a lot more that we can do to continue growing.
If you wanted to. Mm-hmm. Is that a goal? Is growth a goal for a fourth generation?
To an extent, yes.
Why?
Yeah.
Like what motivates that?
Well, we're not done.
Yeah. Is there a fifth generation that's going to take over?
So that's a big word. My son is involved in the business. He's about to be 27. Mm. And that's probably a big thing that people ask me. So is your son going to take over the business? I'm like, he is 27. Please, people. That's a big deal. And he's got a lot to learn still.
Yeah.
It's so, bigger than both of us, so it's way bigger than
him. Yeah. And he's afraid to fail, so he just has to take it all in. And
well, you know, it sounds like you're running the business at a pace that feels comfortable to you. And yet running a company is hard. And, you know, no matter what, it's hard. And do you ever feel like, you know, with competition and all these other things, the regulations and other stuff that, you know, it's just, you know, I mean, one of the words Jen used earlier was like, you know, the stress, fatigue, even burnout. Do you ever feel those kind of things, or are you tempering your business to avoid that stuff?
It's blue sky and sunshine every day. Do you believe me?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, this business definitely has its challenges. What I would say is that we are in a privileged situation. I mean, my brother and I get to work with each other every day. It's nice to have him as a sounding board and vice versa. I think some of those challenges that you encounter make you stronger, as cliche as it may sound. But
they're fun challenges to have.
Yeah. I mean,
not every day is, you know, like she said, sunshine and roses, but it's, you know, it's something that, you know, you go home at the end of the day and you're like, oh, look, I didn't think I was going to have to do that today, but we accomplished it.
Yeah.
So how is it working as a brother and sister? I mean, at some point, is that always good? Do you have sibling fights like you do when you were 12?
She can't stand me some days, but it's mutual. But you know what? At the end of the day, it only lasts like 5 or 10 minutes when we get mad at each other. It's just because we have a common goal, and what that common goal is, we're not really quite sure, but we're having fun running a business.
Yeah. Well, the dirty air gets cleaner when you work with a sibling most of the time.
Really?
What's that mean? Yeah, because you don't harbor grudges.
Seriously?
Or you don't – it's easier just to walk in his office and be like, all right. You just kind of, I don't know. We just have this relationship where things seem to settle pretty easily.
I leave my ego at the curb.
Does he?
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Pretty humble.
That's cool.
Very humble. Yeah.
And?
We have things to accomplish, and our egos get in the way of, you know, oh, I want it done this way. I want it done that way. And, you know, at the end of the day, we get it done. And if
and we stay in our lane, which I think has been
You helpful. Sort of divide. Yeah,
divide
the responsibilities.
Do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're Colorado-based. Is that just it's because your family was here, right? Has Colorado been okay for you? Good for you? Great for you?
Colorado's great.
Love it.
Well, I wouldn't want to go anywhere else. Yeah. We are Colorado-based. We'll always be Colorado-based. Yeah.
Well, do you think you're going to brand with other baseball teams outside of Colorado, things like that?
I wouldn't say no, never.
Yeah.
But
for most of those kind of things, you want a retail presence. Mm.
But it's kind of fun to do it with the Colorado.
Well, of course, right? Because this is our backyard.
Yeah.
And we don't do much retail outside of the state of Colorado. So we're not like your brand X where it's showing up frozen on the shelf and it's all over the country. We want to probably grow more on the food service side.
Mm-hmm. And that's national.
On national.
Yeah. Okay.
And that is about to happen.
Are we going to be seeing, if I call my siblings in other places in the country, they're going to be seeing
at restaurants.
At restaurants?
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Biggest challenge going forward?
Labor, regulations, insurance.
All the stuff you don't
All the stuff that you have to deal with. Yeah.
All right. Steve?
Yeah. All that.
Okay.
Anytime we expand or do anything, the risk is involved. And, you know, how much more risk do we want to take? And is that risk worth it? Will it pay off?
You know, you're so different from a lot of the people that I speak with in this booth, you know, who are entrepreneurs in tech or in software-related kind of, or whatever. And, you know, they've been funded by venture capitalists. The last one was in this room of $55 million of funding from VC. And the pace at which they must drive is different from what I'm sensing from you.
Mm-hmm.
You good with that?
No, we don't owe anybody any money. We're not on, you know, we don't have, you know, investors on our back saying you got to hit the bottom line and this and that. We're making money. We're doing all right.
But I think our drive comes from our grandparents and parents and that type of thing. And so, you know, we work long hours as well, but we definitely have a work-life balance. We want that for our employees as well. And I think that resonates with who we are.
Yeah. Cool. Last question. What is the number one – I'm going to ask both of you. What's the number – and don't interrupt each other. What's the number one piece of advice you would give someone else – who's taking over a legacy family business?
That's a tough question. What would I say? Take it in stride. Not every day is a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, you own it.
Yes, you do. Yeah. Melody?
Be curious. Ask a lot of questions. Lean on people who might be smarter than you in certain areas.
Were you leaning on your family members when you took over?
No, I wouldn't say I was leaning on my family members. No.
I mean,
you're my parents, our parents, yeah. Obviously, for support. And
but not for, not for operational advice, really.
Yeah. I would go to other people in like the industry, even if it was a similar or like business, yeah. Like lean on people.
Build
that
those relationships.
Yeah.
I mean, we're friends with most of our competitors.
Wow.
So, like if I was out of casings, I could go to them for casings or vice versa.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. One of you, what makes you happiest about doing what you're doing?
Not working for the man.
All right. Let's wrap. I'm going to wrap on that note. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Steve Polidori and Melody Polidori-Harris of Polidori Sausage Company. Good to have you both on ProCo 360.
Thank you so much, Dave. It was a pleasure.
Good. Yeah, thank you so much.
And hey, I want a quick thanks again to Jen Lester of Philosophy Communications. She put us together. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. And if you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors Via Technologies, Kinsley Meetings, Denver Angels, and Colorado Biz Magazine. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.